Hello.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is stand-up librarian Meredith Myers on behalf of the West Hollywood Book Fair happening October 2nd at the new West Hollywood Library Park. Today, I am joined by Jamie Rose, author of Shut Up and Dance, The Joy of Letting Go of the Lead on the Dance Floor and Off. And I'm so excited because she's also a natural redhead. How are you, Jamie?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm fantastic because
this book. Are you actually standing up while you do the interview?
I should, actually. I've got my tango shoes on and everything.
Oh, excellent.
Because I'm quite
the
dancer.
The standing up librarian.
The stand-up librarian. I know. It's so funny. I'm the stand-up librarian, and then most of my images on my website and everything have me sitting on a book cart. So, you know, it's a play on words.
Yes, I understand.
Standing up, sitting down, whatever people need me to be, I'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
So you are, like I said, you are a natural redhead as well. You mentioned it in the book. There's so many people trying to be redheads today. Have you noticed this, Rihanna?
I know. Suddenly we're cool. I know. And I grew up, you know, I'm older than you, so when I grew up, it was so uncool. And I grew up in this sort of Mod Squad 60s, that long, straight blonde hair. And I do the Brazilian keratin treatment now, so I have straight hair.
Mm-hmm.
But I had naturally curly red hair, wore braces, and was kind of hyper and needy. So, I was the last one. I was never invited, let's just face it, to the spin the bottle parties. In fact, at one point, I had a spin the bottle party for all the other, like, outcast kids. And when the bottle landed on me, even they didn't want to kiss me.
Oh, no.
Is that sad?
Oh, my gosh.
And I would read these magazines like Tiger Beat, and they go like, and then I would look at all the dating advice, and I would send letters to this girl who later became my friend named Denny Ward, who had straight blonde hair, and I'd write notes like, how do you get a boy to like you? I mean, it was so pathetic. I'm just like the pathetic red-haired girl, really.
Well, I grew up in the 70s, so I was always getting compared to Ronald McDonald and the girl from Wendy's. And then also Little Orphan Annie, and I had naturally curly hair, and I really did resemble Little Orphan Annie. And I'm sorry, nobody wants to kiss that girl. I mean, Sarah Jessica Parker played her on Broadway, but I had huge freckles on my face, and I love my yearbook. People would write, P.S., the beach is free. Do you use milk for tanning oil? I'm like, this is just
ridiculous. You know, they had like something called Swedish Tanning Secret in the 70s, and I put it on. And I'd be like laying out there, and now I've already taken like basal cell carcinomas off my face because of the laying out there. Like, what's the secret? Just my skin just doesn't do it. And we had something called QT, which was the original sunless tanning stuff, and it turned you bright orange. And oh my gosh, it was just I was pathetic. Plus the neck gear. Plus I had, like, not only did I have braces, but I had the extra metal bar that stuck out. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah.
I never had braces. Thankfully, I had pretty good teeth.
It could have been much worse later.
But, yes, I wore lots of hats. But look at us now. I mean, look at us
now. We're hot.
Now, people, we are hot. It's a radio interview. You can't
see it. People need to go to our website and see our dance footage just to see how hot we are.
Yeah, exactly. We both have dance footage. Yes, and those websites, if you're wanting to tune in now while we're talking, and you can, well, do whatever you need to do. StandUpLibrarian.com is mine, and then Jamie's is JRoseStudio.com.
So actually, I've got a new one, which is Jamie Rose
Studio.
Yeah, Rose Studio. But there's a link for the old one, but it's Jamie Rose Studio, and I have my first acting job ever was actually go-go dancing on a Kool-Aid commercial called Kool-Aid a Go-Go, and then I got to go-go dance again about 10 years ago, so next to it is that footage.
Oh, my gosh, so you were go-go dancing with the Kool-Aid, the guy?
With the bunny, well, next to him, but I actually, the inside trivia when they see the footage of the Kool-Aid commercial is I was actually in love with my dance partner, Bobby Rhea, who actually, people as old as me would know him from a live-action version of Jack and the Beanstalk that Gene Kelly did, and Bobby Rhea played Jack, and I was in love with him, and of course he was a huge star to me. So you can see as I'm watusing and jerking and ponying the look of love and longing in my eyes toward Bobby in the commercial.
Wow. To dance with the Kool-Aid, that's pretty incredible. I was on a failed dance show, a lot of people might not know this, called Master of Dance. It was in 2007. Joey Lawrence was the host. But I was judged by the woman from Electric Boogaloo. 2. The Breakin' 2, Electric Boogaloo. Not even the original Breakin', the sequel. The woman was Lucinda Dickey, and she was trying to tell me my flash dance wasn't good. And I was just like, are you kidding me? I'm a librarian. It's lucky I know how to move at all.
Exactly. In your weight class, you're like pound for pound the best breakdancing librarian, perhaps the only breakdancing librarian.
I did breakdance. I purposely, I did. There was a song I had to dance to Super Freak or something, and I knew she was the judge, and I was like, I'm so going to win points for trying to attempt to spin on my back. And it was
a
live studio audience and everything. Thank you.
I thought you did well. I couldn't do it.
Oh, my gosh.
And
maybe
the floor was really slippery.
It was interesting. Yeah, that whole show was – we were actually dancing to not the original version. And then – or we did dance to the original version, and then when the show went to air, they had some – they couldn't – they didn't want to pay the money, I guess, for the original
music. Right, they had to have –
They had some fake thing on there. So obviously Jamie and I are talking about dancing because it really ties in with her new book called Shut Up and Dance, where basically it's you're using the art of dance and towards relationships and dating and that sort of thing, right?
Yeah, I got the idea for the book when about 6 years ago I started studying the Argentine tango as a hobby, and the Argentine tango is a partner dance that is known among people who do ballroom dance, et cetera, as the most difficult lead-follow dance because, in fact, it is so strictly lead-follow that it really is like learning another language. And what I found was that the hardest part about the dance for me was not the movements themselves, but actually this idea of following somebody else's lead. And the other women, my age and younger also and older, all shared. I was surprised to find that most of the women I talked to, the hard part for them was also following the lead. And that's what, and then I started hearing some of my leaders on the dance floor saying some of the same things to me that my boyfriend was saying, which was, you know, I feel like you're trying to control me. You're not listening to me. You're criticizing me. And, and there I was on the dance floor faced with myself in relationship. And I realized that there was a very strong analogy and that, that there needed to be a book about this because I learned so much from it. And I'm someone, you know, I'm old and I'm in my early 50s and, well, whatever. I'm old enough to have had a long life where I've done a lot of therapy and all that kind of stuff. But I found on the dance floor I could no longer run away from this aspect of myself that I needed to develop my ability to share the lead. And that's what the book is really about, is what I learned about relinquishing control. Sometimes, not all the times, make no mistake, I really don't want anybody to think that this is a book about women need to follow and men need to lead and that's what needs to happen. No. It was about me discovering an under-accessed part of my own personality, a part that I had sort of renounced with my take charge in a balanced way kind of bossy personality that's served me well in my career, but it was hurting me in my relationship only when I could never take that boss hat off. I needed to learn how to share the lead.
I say forget leading. I just would like to find somebody that can keep up with this because, honestly, people out there, if you're listening, I'm quite the show on the dance floor. But, you know, when I was reading the book and it was about dancing, but it's like, oh, my gosh, this is really about my personal life as well and dating and whatnot. And there's probably been one relationship, the recent one I had, that I was with somebody that actually could keep up with me on the dance floor and could end in my life. And I just always say I have the bar real high. But I think I am one of those women that probably takes the lead too much and people are intimidated and that's why I think this book is important.
And obviously anybody who loves us, of course, loves that part of us. So it's not about getting rid of that part, but it's about noticing, am I kind of steamrolling my partner? Do I need to step back a little bit and learn how to let go sometimes? And that was what I really needed to do. And it improved my relationship so much.
Yeah, I mean, the first chapter of the book on page 29 is you say, you know, your first partner is you. So in a way, you kind of have to start with yourself.
Yeah, I talked to somebody who was pretty much a serial monogamist for most of my life until I hit my late 20s, more like my 30s. And there were several years where I couldn't get a date. I mean, I could get a date, but I couldn't get much further than that to save my life. And I talk about how I really learned how to be like my own romantic partner, and not in the be, you know, alone with my vibrator way, actually. Because actually, I have just a moment about that. Okay, at that time, okay, now we'll get down and dirty. A girlfriend of mine gave me one of those vibrators that has, like, the thumb thing on it, you know? And I remember in my little room alone, when I turned the vibrator on, and it was, like, the loneliest sound in the world, the sound of zzz. So I'm not talking about that part. I'm talking about the romantic adventure part, right? So
all my librarian followers are
kind of
freaking out right now because we're talking about vibrators.
And really, I was like, okay, now I'm the biggest loser in the world. I turn up, like, okay, the sound of my pain is either, like, the loneliest sound in the world. But anyway, I digress. But I would go off and, like, I wanted to river raft. So I went by myself to the Kern River and got a room in a motel and signed up for a little kayaking down the river trip. And I was a single, so I got to go in a two-man kayak with the tour guide who happened to be a 35-year-old blonde fireman. I'm just saying,
nice.
For the straight women out there or straight men out there who just, you know, if you're single, you get, or sorry, non-straight men out there, you get, you know, you get kind of a good shot at hooking up with someone really cool, you know, that's what I
found.
So, and then I went and learned to ski by myself, and I actually had a great time, and I really learned how to partner myself, and I didn't need a mate in order to have an adventurous, fun life. And I really discovered that. And so that way, when I went into relationship, I was a whole person. And so it was about adding to my life. And it's on the dance floor. If I am hanging on my dance partner and expecting them to hold my weight up, I'm not a good dance partner. Likewise, if I'm leading and I'm pushing my partner around and dictating how they should move with no care about what they find fun, then I'm a bad leader. So the book is really about both sides of the partnership.
And in that same mentality, you do offer some exercises in the book for people to look at. We've got page 60 here. There's an exercise called the shopping cart tango.
Yeah.
It got my attention because I love to eat, and I'm often at the grocery store with my shopping cart when they play good music in the grocery store, and I'm moving my hips and whatnot. Can you tell us about that little exercise?
Well, you know, I got the idea. Actually, it's not my original idea completely. It was just in the context of the book. But when people start doing tango, we all find, all of us tangueros and tangueras, we budding ones, we end up in the market pushing a shopping cart and practicing our walking and our ochos, which is a way of making sort of figure eights as you move on the floor, because the gliding of the cart really facilitates practice. And if you go on YouTube and stuff and put in tango and grocery cart, you'll find a bunch of videos. In fact, later on today, I'll put one up on my site. But so I kind of use that in conjunction with some other exercises I had in my book about really just to have fun and to play in the land of, well, you know, what kind of people do you admire and think about them and how would they move? And it's something you can do just to kind of make the normal day-to-day things you do more fun, but also maybe send some ideas that will ripple out into the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm. And then we're moving on with the food theme with a section called A Man Can Handle His Own Meatballs, and that's page 71. Honey, I prefer he would handle his own meatballs. I say go for it, babe. Seriously, handle your own meatballs. I'm going to be over here eating a sandwich. What is that?
And not watching. Well, that story was just an anecdote where I have this – when it's imbalanced of kind of bossy, controlling kind of personality and my husband. Well, it's, you know, you have to read the anecdote in the book to really get the I don't want to kill the joke, but it's a riff about how I wanted to just kind of plunge in there and remind the waiter and other people, the waiter, that he had forgotten to bring my husband his meatballs, and then I would remember that my husband actually has his own balls and himself.
I think what you said was pretty powerful, even though it's joking aside. I mean, it's just like so many times I am just somebody, I was a publicist for 10 years. So however I am in life, I'm very much like I have to pick up the pieces. I have to communicate. I have to make sure everybody knows what's going on. And some people might see it as annoying if they don't know that I've been a publicist for so many years and that's what my job was. Well, I sometimes feel myself like at a meal, and I've been a waitress many times as well. So I can think like the waitress, and I'm like, okay, if he didn't order this, he he ordered the meatballs, where's the meatballs? So it's so easy for us, I think, sometimes to just step up and say and speak for them. But I've learned now just to say, you know what? If he wants the meatballs, he's going to have to ask for the meatballs. And that applies to other meatballs, too, people. I'm not always going to offer if I'm not seeing you make an effort, if you know what I mean. Seriously.
Can I just say that we really do need to have our own show called Meatballs with Meredith and Jamie.
You know what? That's going to be on the air after the book fair that we're both appearing at. We're both appearing at this book fair. We might have to talk to somebody about getting that show on the air. I think it's going to be real a hit. And we'll get it. It should be a video, though, so we can dance at the same time. We can dance with meatballs. Yeah, we can go whole. Two redheads on a radio is going to be interesting, folks, as you can already tell by this conversation.
Well, the point of that anecdote, though, is to talk about, you know, that part of my personality that can troubleshoot and pick up the slack is a great quality. It's not about getting rid of it. But sometimes I prevent people from having their own experience because of my need to jump in there and fix it. And not everybody wants me to jump in there and fix it. That was a big revelation. They don't need me to, nor necessarily want me to come in and fix it. So I learned to pause and maybe not just jump in there, which was, you know, not just in romantic relationships, but in friendships too. This sort of, I'm someone who a lot of people would come to for advice. I'm kind of that role in a lot of my friendships. But sometimes I would give advice without the person asking for it. So
absolutely.
I had to learn how to really shut up. Basically, the book could be called, like, Shut Up Sometimes, right? Just shut up sometimes. And I learned to just zip the lips sometimes. And how that
and it's
sometimes
hard for us, you know, like,
and sometimes that's my
women,
most effective way. Sometimes my most effective way of communicating is to just shut up.
Mm-hmm. People are always happy when I shut up, and that's why when I said I'm doing these radio interviews, they're like, "Oh, brother." Here
but
she
I
goes again.
I'm so excited about being at the West Hollywood Book Fair because I mean, I'm like you, just such a book person, and. For me to have a book out at the West Hollywood Book Fair and be on a panel is just mind-blowingly exciting. And the panel I'm on is with some fantastic writers, too. Lisa Teasley is moderating, and Hope Edelman will be on the panel, and Lisa Napoli and Donald Vandermark, I believe is his name. And he wrote a book about, like, these qualities of really successful people. And I download the book, and I'm hoping I can adopt some of these qualities before the panel.
There's a lot going on, and it's overwhelming because you're appearing, I'm appearing. We have to focus on what we're doing, but then we're such book nerds that there's so many other people that I'm hoping to see, and I'm kind of doing my schedule now, like, okay, I'm going to have to be at this stage for work stuff, but then I'm going to have to go over here to see my friend here and whatever. But, yeah, the panel that you're on, you're in the Current Events and Hot Topics Pavilion, and the panel is called Possibilities on Finding Paths to a Greater Self. And, everybody, that's going to be from 1:30 to 2:30, and then Jamie's going to have some signings at 2:30, so definitely put that on your calendar. I think what you were talking about earlier, too, of just, like, taking the lead, you have a section of your book about
planning. I dropped my headset. Sorry, go ahead.
You dropped your headset
for a second. I got so excited talking to you that I got a little hyper and pulled my headset off.
It happens.
I'm back.
People drop things, not normally headpieces. there's a section in the book, actually page 87, that talks about planning and expecting him to plan. And I think that was an interesting part of the book because sometimes I think we do get in the habit of planning and speaking up for people in relationships and whatnot. And then we get to a point and we wonder why they're not stepping up and planning things.
Yeah. Well,
and I think
dated,
that was pretty powerful.
Yeah. When I dated, I just, I would, I just, you know, and I'm, and again, the book, you know, I the book talks about men and women, but I'm talking about the archetypical masculine and feminine energetics. I'm not talking about genitalia, you know, so I'm really just talking about being a balanced person in the sort of yin-yang idea or the Jungian idea of anima and animus. So it doesn't have to be gender specific. It's about energetics. But in my dating, I would play the man role. Mostly, I would do the calling, I would do the planning, and I'd kind of make relationships happen often. But the only kind of person that would enjoy that kind of behavior for me was somebody who had a more feminine energetic, right? Men who had a more, if I'm heterosexual, so men who would have a more feminine energetic were the only ones who would kind of stand for that behavior. But then at one point, I'd get tired of doing all the work and kind of sit back expecting them to be the man, and then they weren't because that's not who I picked. I picked the kind of person who liked me to play the man role.
See, that was my last relationship. That is my last relationship,
yeah.
And that's why I'm single now, and I'm proud of it.
Yeah, but if I don't leave room for them to step up, they're not going to. And the guy I'm married to now is a very energetically masculine man, and he would have been completely turned off to that kind of behavior. He likes to do that stuff, and it doesn't mean I can't do some of it myself. But if I do all of it, you know, I don't get to have the fun. In the book, I talk about how typically culturally in Argentina, in an Argentine tango, the woman or the follower, you know, the receiver, waits to be asked to dance. And it's done in a very subtle way in Argentina called the cabecillo, which is where the man or the leader catches the gaze of the woman and slightly nods his head down toward the dance floor. And then the woman gets to either show her assent by slightly nodding herself and joining him on the dance floor, or simply looking away. So it's a very subtle way, this sort of asking. It's actually really cool to see it happen. But it was so wonderful for me to not do the asking and to have the wonderful experience of being asked, because it was a wonderful feeling to be desired. And I found that in my dating, too, that I was so busy doing all the asking out that I could never be sure that this was a person who cared enough about me to risk the rejection and put the work into asking me out. And when I allowed myself to start having that experience, it was a wonderful feeling. I felt really valued.
That's why, I mean, I'm a very assertive woman, and I have no problem asking for things. But at the same time, it really is nice to see someone else making the effort, because when they're making the effort, they're putting themselves out there, like you said, and they're facing rejection. And that's why sometimes I think when you speak of dance or you're in I don't really tend to go to clubs too much anymore, because I feel like some people just start dancing with you. There's no, like, asking permission. There's no courtship. There's no, like, flirtation. It's just like you turn around and somebody's on you. And that's where I think the kids today are missing it. Listen, you're good looking dude, but you've already made me angry because you're all up in my space, you know, and that's why I've actually gone to salsa dancing. There's a variety of different places here in Los Angeles where they do that, and I went and I was amazed. Just I love all the men at the salsa dancing, love to approach the women, and you know, women out there, if you're wanting to meet somebody, that's probably the place to go.
And men too. Hello, I tell all my men friends, they're like, I'm lonely, I can't be. I'm like, learn to dance.
Absolutely.
Learn to lead. I talked to a very eminent psychiatrist named Dr. Philip Stutz, who's an expert on Jungian psychology, and actually has his own book coming out next year. But he talked about partner dance as being an actual embodiment of the archetypical female-male energetics. And so if you look at it, you know, the lead and the follow and the asking and the receiving, I mean, it's a really beautiful example of this sort of old-time etiquette, and there's something lovely about it.
Now, we have to talk about something really, really important. I noticed in your bio and in the book, I noticed that you have 25 pairs of tango shoes.
Yeah.
I'm a bit of a fashionista, so that got my attention. 25 pairs? Really?
Well, you know, and I'm sorry, but that number isn't quite right, because I now have 30 pair.
Oh, my
gosh. Because I wrote that a while ago now. Yeah, and not only do I have 30 pairs of – these are dance shoes. These are not regular shoes. I have many more regular shoes, but – I have also, because I do West Coast swing and some salsa and some tango, I have different shoes for the different dances. Plus, I have dance sneakers for if I'm taking classes. So I have, like, several different kinds of pair of shoes in my trunk at any given time, so that if the opportunity to dance presents itself, I have the proper footwear.
See, at least you're using yours for dancing, though. I actually have close to 30 pairs of purple shoes. People that know me know I'm obsessed with the color purple, and I have about 20 to 30 pair. I haven't counted recently because I'm trying to get
really
into new colors. But
my
30
dear,
pairs
I have
of purple
a pair,
shoes.
I have a pair of purple patent leather 4-inch heel tango shoes with a purple heel and orange patent leather straps.
Wow, you better not invite me over. Those things are going to go missing. Seriously,
they're pretty awesome. Yeah.
Another thing that I think viewers, like I'm on TV, like our show is already on the air.
Our viewers.
Our listeners out there, you actually were on a show called Falcon Crest, which we watched growing up. My dad was a huge fan and everything. But yeah, you were on that show. Now, in the book, you kind of talked about it for a second, because Janine Turner from Northern Exposure and Heather Locklear were up for your role What was that like? What was can you talk about that?
When I tested for the role in the original, the pilot for Falcon Crest was actually called The Vintage Years. And vintage as in, you know, play on wine vintage. And Earl Hamner was the creator of Falcon Crest and the creator of the Vintage Years. And coming off the Waltons, he was a big redhead lover. And the original mother in The Vintage Years was Samantha Eggar, who was a beautiful redheaded British actress. She's still acting. She's marvelous. And but testing for the role was the blonde, who was Heather Locklear, the brunette, Janine Turner, and redheaded me. And a big part of why I think I got cast was because I was the redhead, and Samantha was a redhead. But then they ended up recasting. They didn't want, I think, a Brit in the lead, and they ended up recasting with Susan Sullivan, who's a blonde. And I was shocked that they didn't replace me at that time. I don't really know why. I think it must have been Earl Hamner. But, so I stayed on. But I mean, certainly Janine Turner and Heather were just as stunning then as they are now. So I was pretty intimidated. I was pretty shocked when I got the part, to tell you the truth.
Did you like working on that show? Was that a good experience?
Oh, my gosh. It was fantastic. I mean, we were on location in the Napa Valley, and we used to go to Calistoga, and they had that, which was like Mud Bath Massage Central, and we'd go there on the weekends and get our mud baths, and it was just great. And the family, the Gioberti family, which was my family on Falcon Crest, we really did feel like family. And recently there was a Falcon Crest reunion at the Paley Center in Beverly Hills, and I got to see Susan Sullivan and Robert Foxworth and Lorenzo Lamas and Ana Alicia, who actually I'm still friends with. In fact, I was her daughter's acting coach through high school. I still feel like they're my family. I feel like they're my cousins, you know. It just was great to see them all.
And you're still obviously acting. I know that you've been on Two and a Half Men, and of course you were on NYPD Blue and House and a variety of other things. Do you have any other upcoming projects that we could talk
about now, or plug? All my time right now is being put into promoting the book, and I saw my writing teacher Jim Crusoe yesterday, who reminded me that I need to start another book. That, like, I'm not done now. So I'm pretty busy with that right now. And this summer, you know, I did a movie last December called Route 32, TOO, which will be out next year. And then I did two plays back to that I wrote the book and sent it to my publishers. Then I did two plays back to back this summer. I did Hercules Furins at the Getty Villa, and then an original play called Revisiting Wildfire with Denise Crosby at the Odyssey, and then, boom, the book came out, and I'm into promotion and starting my book tour. So I'm kind of busy with that for the next few weeks. So, I mean, sorry, right, next few months, but so I don't know when the next job will be, but it'll be.
Your plate is full, and it's going to continue to be full because the book is terrific.
Which I'm pretty grateful about. Oh, thank you.
It really is. I mean, just as someone that it's everybody's loving dance right now with all the shows on the air, the Dancing with the Stars, and So You Think You Could Dance, and all of that. I think it's the perfect timing to have a book like this in your libraries, librarians, and people at home with your personal libraries. Please definitely get this book, Shut Up and Dance. And she will, again, Jamie Rose will be at the West Hollywood Book Fair on October 2nd. She will be at this Possibilities on Finding Paths to a Greater Self panel at 1:30, and I will be on the theater stage at around 5:30 to be telling some jokes about libraries and whatnot. For more information on Jamie Rose, you can go to jamierosestudio.com. For information on me, stand-up librarian Meredith Myers, please go to standuplibrarian.com. And for more information on the West Hollywood Book Fair, westhollywoodbookfair.org. Jamie, honestly, this is terrific. I had such a fun time today speaking with you about all these type of things, and I look forward to meeting you in person at the book fair.
I want to see you at 5:30. Was it 5:30 on the theater stage?
Like 5:25, 5:30. I hope you
can
come over. You know what? We should do a dance number. We might just do a dance number, people. Seriously, you never know with me and when I perform. Anything's possible because I've just got such a vast background. So bring your tango shoes, especially those purple ones. Really want to see those, if you know what I mean.
I bet. Or I'll wear them for you.
Yes, it was an absolute pleasure, and I wish you nothing but the best. And everybody
out there,
West Hollywood Book Fair, October 2nd, come visit me and Jamie. And I guess we will see you on Sunday. Thank you so much, Jamie. All right.
Bye-bye.
Talk to you later, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
on the debris. At the Sunday morning market, he was starting to the odds and ends. He was looking for a bargain. I heard your footsteps at the front door, and that old familiar love song. Gosh, you knew you'd find me waiting there at the top of the stairs. Trouble at the depot with the General Workers Union, and yet that they'll never change a thing. Well, they won't fight, and they're not working.